This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello everyone, welcome to the Red Men TV for the final word. I'm Paul Machin, Chris Pajak, and Ben Kelly joined me for this one as well. This slightly truncated show this week because obviously we've got the Champions League draw coming up. We want to do that live, that's going to be interesting. Chris, I said that with match reaction, it bears repeating because it's no less true. It's a really, really, really good job that Watford for the crap because they should have absolutely buried us at the weekend.
I'm not sure about buried us, but... And I don't think they were crap, to be honest with you. I think they were really, really, really crap
in front of goal.
And that's where it boiled down to. Then obviously, you got Sarr, you got the Corey missing absolute fucking golden chances. But Liverpool did what they needed to do. Like we've seen so often this season, haven't we? And it doesn't matter whether it's Watford or whether it is anybody else. Liverpool just win games of football. And did you see Jermaine Genus talking on Five Live yesterday about it and how annoyed he seems to be about how Liverpool are so good and yet they're not playing that well? And that's kind of what it comes down to. I think it's just now...
Still bitter about the Champions League final.
He's a fucking wet lettuce,
isn't he? Completely fucking useless. And he was during his playing career as well, to be honest with you. This is coming from a lad who had no playing career, of course, but still...
Well, you've had plenty of distance to judge.
Exactly. I've probably watched more football than he has.
He's probably a nice fella, to be fair. But when you see a number of historically bad football shells, they often come from the likes of most of the BBC pundits, to be fair. Look, the point's right, isn't it, Ben? Is that, look, Watford's finishing was amongst the most woeful. I've watched those highlights back half a dozen times now, and every time the ball drops to Decore or drops to Sarr, it's a goal. It's just a goal. Just hit the target, do anything. The fact that they have two of those where they completely, utterly miscue it or whatever is, it's sensational.
That Sarr in particular, where it goes backwards.
Because the angle behind it.
Well, yeah, because you sat in a similar seat
we
to me.
To went forwards.
I couldn't figure out what had happened. And then everybody cheered. And I'm going, oh, he's just sliced that. He's just complete. And then the other one comes across it and it goes over the bar. It's bizarre because Watford have a lot of good players in terms of, you know, Ducor is a good player, De La Faye is a good player. I've not seen enough of Sarr to really comment, but that's what I've seen of him now. So
I've made
the executive decision he's not very good.
He's shit forever because we saw him at Anfield once.
Oh, yeah, 100%. So is he the one, there's the video in the tunnel that was afterwards?
Yeah, with Mane.
Mane calling him a shy, saying he's a shy boy.
He's a good boy. Look after him to Troy
good,
and all that.
Like. Good boy, shy boy.
Not a very good finisher.
He's fucking rubbish in front of goal, so I see if you can teach him anything. Actually, maybe not you.
But they created a fair few chances. You know, there's one inside the first 5 minutes where I think it might be Sarr or Decore. They cross it in for Deeney, who should do better. Alisson makes a couple of good saves in the second half. There's one before the offside goal, which I'm sure we'll come on to, where, you know, I think Sarr has to go through and Alisson has to make a save. So, that you know, they were creating chances. And I messaged, you know, one of the group chats at the minute at half-time going, they've caused us some problems here, but they're just rubbish in front of goal. It's just they're just lacking that extra bit of quality. Yeah. And if they go down this season, I think that'll be the downfall for them.
The mad thing for me is that, like, you've got Liverpool now, you've got 3 clean sheets on the bounce, and that was probably the worst we've defended all season long yesterday. Yeah. And it kind of shows you that clean sheets don't actually count for too much, do they? Because you can be really good and concede a goal, and you can be really shit and not.
I had a few thoughts around that game in similar vein. It was like the assist, like assist goals and assists, and you got goals and assists. Like Divock Origi's got an assist in this game. We'll talk about that goal more, but it's like when you judge players based solely on, like I say, based solely on the stats, they're misleading. You can always tell away from the 100%.
Definitely meant that.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Not having it any other way.
Yeah, absolutely.
We don't exist on the same plane as Divock Origi. Yeah. We cannot possibly know what was going through his head. I think what he was really doing, he was bantering the core and Saar and getting an assist at the same time.
Yeah. If you're going to miss right. Yeah, absolutely. I thought it was interesting, Ben, Nigel Pearson's comments after the match, and he talked about his
No one's ever said setup. That before, Paul.
No one's
ever said Nigel Pearson's comments were interesting. Yeah.
But he said about his tactical setup. Up, he was like, you just can't come here and park the bus for 90 minutes. He said, we had to make a point of coming out and trying to cause Liverpool problems. And, you know, I'd said it, I think it's in the build-up show. He's spot on. You know, all the teams that have tried to take it to us are the teams that have given us the most difficulties this season. We've gone to a level now where, by and large, if you're going to sit back and defend, we'll just pick it apart. Yeah. Eventually, we'll find a way to do it. Whereas I still think, you know, you see it with Man City and obviously with us as well.
You're still damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Exactly,
though, aren't you?
But you might as well yeah. go swinging. And that's the thing about that is, you know, we're 1-0 up, and it's the point you make just before the disallowed goal. Alisson makes a big save prior to that. Mm-hmm. They've had chances prior. Liverpool could have been a goal or could have been a goal behind on a number of different occasions during that game, or it could have been level at any number of occasions. Now, I'm not saying we wouldn't have gone on and won it because we've got that in our locker, certainly. But yeah, you know, it's another example. Like Norwich did the same to us as well. Got battered, but gave us
a
real go.
I think a lot of teams now, we are definitely in that same bracket of Man City, particularly away, where they just kind of treat the game as a free hit. You know, it's a game treated in isolation. It's when they look back at the context of their season, you know, if they do go down, they're not going to go, well, you know, we should have taken 3 points at Anfield. You know, it's one of them where, you know, you go, you create chances, and if you come away having lost, as you expected to, then, you know, they've come away probably, okay, there's a couple of chances there that they thought maybe we could have got a point, but they're probably made up to just lose 2-0, to be honest, because if they still had the blinking Flores in charge, it probably, you know, it was so disorganised, it could have been 5 or 6.
Yeah, I always think that, you know, if I was a fan of a team who'd come up or who were down there, during the course of the season, I'd much rather just see them go for 3 than go for 1. Mm-hmm. And that's what it comes down to, because you're just as likely to lose if you go for 1, because you're not, you know, you're relying so much on keeping a clean sheet at that point.
Yeah.
What I find interesting is I actually think this is a really interesting part of the season where teams can do that. Towards the back end of the season, when people start thinking about goal difference, they stop going for those 3 points and they start going for the points.
And have you got the legs to do it as well?
Exactly. So I think this is a really tricky part of the season because of the games, but also because the teams are still willing to go for 3 points at this point.
Yeah, no, definitely. The one thing I don't know, I've not really seen it mentioned in many places, Ben, but the wind played a massive part in how the game was played. The amount of times players lost the flight of the ball or it shifted, so Joe Gomez got stuck a couple of times. It wouldn't shock me if, you know, you think about it, there's 3 efforts on goal at the cop end that are all missed, but, you know, but completely miscued. Divock Origi, you know, is technically one of them, although it is a great assist. I don't know how much that it translated to the telly, but there was loads of times when the ball just got
even the goal. I think even Salah's goal, I think the wind catches it, because Foster, I don't know. Foster seems to come, which I don't understand why, because he seems to come out a little bit. But the way he sort of stays rooted is like, it looks as if he thinks it's going wide or something, and then it seems to bend back in. So yeah, I didn't really notice it as much at the time, to be honest. But having, you know, to go back to your point about it coming across on the telly, having watched Match of the Day, actually, I noticed a few more incidents where I think, you know, that incident where Joe Gomez kind of, as you said there, I think he kind of heads it, doesn't he? I think he just loses what he's doing, whether he just takes his eye off the ball as well or what. I'm not sure, but yeah, I think it did. I think it did have an impact.
Well,
maybe
let's talk about Joe Gomez, Chris. I thought by and large, I thought he was absolutely outstanding. He has a few sticky moments in the game. A couple of them caused by the wind, I think. Couple of them caused by Troy Deeney, who I think got slightly more change out of him than he got out of Virgil van Dijk on the day. But in terms of the things that you want Joe Gomez doing, my concern over him this season, and we've not seen a lot of him, is that I don't know that he's not being groomed as Virgil van Dijk's understudy in the long term. And I don't think we need 2 Virgil van Dijks in our back four, as much as that sounds wonderful.
You know what? For the longest time, I would have agreed with you. And it's only through thinking about it and watching him, and I realised that maybe our view is slightly skewed on that. because I think for years we've always seen this one lad who's going to put his body on the line, and one lad who's the cool, calm, hippie style defender, and the other one's the honcho or the Carragher or something like that. Yeah. But we've never really seen a team with two Virgils. Mm. And the reason is, there isn't enough centre-backs like that go round all the top sides. So the more I think they can actually do that, because Virgil can be aggressive when he needs to be. Joe can be aggressive when he needs to be. They can both drop off. They can both play the ball. I think it actually gives you maybe a little bit of an advantage if you've got two players like that. Mm-hmm. I think it's just that we don't ever really see teams play like that.
Yeah, my point is, because I think you're dead right, because we've seen it with Matip, because I think Matip is a bit of, we talked about him being the prototype for Virgil and what we wanted. He's quite cool, he's calm on the ball, etc., etc. I mean an attitude in terms of, I wonder whether Gomez is trying to carry himself a bit like Van Dijk. You actually need, he doesn't have to bomb around the place because he's so good. Whereas I think until you get to the level of Virgil van Dijk's ability, you have to put a bit more. It's like, you know, you see those lads who, you think that showing how good you are is taking more time in what you do sometimes, whereas you just need to get the fundamentals right. And I think Gomez's game actually works to the best when he is still being the guy who's in behind Virgil. He does a lot of the data. Like, I wonder whether he's just been slightly lax, and like, you look at Virgil and go, oh well, that's how I carry myself. It's like, well, he can carry himself because he's the fucking best centre half in the world.
I don't know, to be honest, Paul. Maybe you're right on that one. I just know that I like the way that he carries himself, and I like the way that, you know, he's got that sort of burst when he needs to get back and get the ball in, but also that willingness to throw his body on the line. You know, be that a sliding tackle or a block or something like that. We saw all of that at the weekend. I mean, everyone will talk about the couple of mistakes he's made in the passing game. But for me, it's the passes that probably no one, they're not making any compilations, but there was a ball that he played from the right edge of our penalty area into Shaqiri through three players, and I'm like, that's outstanding. It's not going to make a highlight package, but Shaqiri's just able to flick it onto Trent and we're on the attack. It's that type of stuff that I really enjoy, because I know that he's breaking through the press when he does it, and he's got much more ability to be able to do that than Dejan Lovren. Matip's really good at it as well, to be fair. I couldn't tell you who was better at it, but also I think Joe's speed is a really useful asset to have.
Yeah, completely agree. Mm-hmm. He was good. And the problem he's had this season in particular, Ben, he's either played poorly or the games that he's been in, he's not really had a chance to shine. Mm. This was a really good game for him because he has all those moments. He's got those picture, but there's two moments. There's one where he tracks back into the left back position and wins it. And there's one where he's in a straight foot race, comes across and wins the ball. In fact, and there's another block as well inside
the box. Yeah, two of them were with Saar, weren't they, as well?
And those are the moments that stand out and make you go, yeah, that's just how good a defender he is.
Yeah, he was. I thought he was brilliant. And I think we discussed on the instant match reaction that you know, that was probably the first performance we've seen that was probably at a similar level as prior to the injury. You know, if you think about some of the games that he played prior to breaking his leg, and it's been a long road back for him. We probably underrated how difficult of an injury it was to come back from, to be honest, because, you know, I think he had a couple of setbacks along the way and it was all going so well for him. Joel Matip took his place and started playing really well. You know, he would have played in a Champions League final. You know, he probably would have started that. You know, there's all these things add up. And then, you know, there's been a couple of games this season. I didn't think he was particularly great against Salzburg at home. You know, I've been informed that he wasn't great against Napoli at home either. You know, I didn't get to see that game. But this was the first time, really. And whether or not it's the quality of the opposition having an effect, we'll see. But you've got to start somewhere. You know, we've got games coming up that we're going to need him to play well in. You know, we've got some big games coming up this week. And then, obviously, one eye now is pretty much on that Leicester game on Boxing Day, and we're going to need him to play well there.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is not like if we had to drop Seth Vandenberg in, Chris. Mm-hmm. You know, this is a lad who has maybe not conclusively proven himself, but he's played well at centre half before. He's not an unknown quantity. So, like, you know, we were talking about, again, to wanting to build up to this game. No one was asked. Gomez is going to come in, and we've all wanted to see Gomez, and it was just on him. It's all on him now. He's got the opportunity. He's just got to take it.
Yeah, I think Joe is almost a victim of his own success at times, because He's 22 years old. Centre-halves aren't supposed to perform at the level that he was performing at last season prior to the injury at 21 years old. You know, and now he's 22 and he's still able to put those types of performances together. And,
it's Joe's agent, right?
Yeah, exactly. No problem. I'll take a sweetener for you, mate. I'll talk about Joe Gomez all day. And I think that, you know, centre-halves don't normally hit their peak until 26, 27, 28 maybe even. I wonder what level he's going to be at when he gets to that stage, especially playing next to Van Dijk for so long.
Van Dijk wasn't this good at 22.
No, he wasn't.
If he can stay injury-free as well, you know, because that's the one concern with him, isn't it? Yeah. Just, you know, I know that obviously the broken leg was a bad tackle and those things happen, but he has had his injury problems as well. So if he does stay fully fit, you're right, you know, he's going to be absolutely brilliant. And then he's going to be the type as well who... Obviously, all the time now we talk about, well, who's playing alongside Van Dijk and can Van Dijk, you know, coach Lovren through a game, you know, you've got players. But then you've got Joe Gomez, who at one point might become the Van Dijk of the team. And then you've got the likes of Van den Berg and, you know, other young centre-backs who will be coming through who will then improve by playing alongside Joe Gomez. And surely that's the plan.
Absolutely. It's like succession planning, isn't it? It's what... great teams have in place, but Man United were amazing at doing through the 90s and noughties and what have you. No, we're really encouraging, and I think the good mentality to have with Gomez is to remember, like, he'd basically never played centre-half for us until the start of last season. Mm. You know, when we were talking in the pre-season, being like, not really sure he'll start centre-half this season, he's probably still going to be mainly right-back, blah, 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 and then he started the season, and we're going into every game going, looking at who he was up against and going, I wonder how he'll handle himself against this guy and this guy, because the historically, in the last 10 years, say, big, burly target men have been Liverpool's Achilles heel, you know, Benteke et al.
Didi.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and again, go start looking at these games, start looking at these players that he's up against and seeing how he conducts himself, because, you know, last the start of last season, he was impeccable against all these lads. And I say his ceiling is very, very high indeed. Because losing Gini Wijnaldum was a major kick in the teeth.
It meant we had to play 4-2-3-1, Paul.
Well, you know, we've been playing 4-2-3-1. Not that you'd know by watching the LFC TV coverage. All right, here's the thing. I get it, getting it wrong in the build-up to a match.
Yeah.
But you put the highlights package out, just change it. Just change it after the fact. No one else, every other major production company will do that. Like, you know, Match of the Day won't have it wrong. More often than not, we'll have it wrong. Anyone from LFC TV watching, I know you must be because you've robbed all of our days over the last 10 years. But I don't know why they don't change people had to be on Monday. Come in every Monday morning and watch the highlights back, and it's like, that's not how Liverpool end up. It works for Shaqiri, I think you can argue it works for Salah. Are we back in this situation, or are we going to be back in this situation where we're questioning Roberto Firmino again? Because I remember this time last year, you went staunchly on his defence and saying what a great job he was doing in the 10. I've got a feeling Bobby Firmino is kind of running on empty at the moment.
I'm going to take the same position as last time. I think, you know, it's very difficult to disagree with the fact that he's not playing as well as he has been. He probably does look a little bit tired. His touch is the thing for me that's really letting him down at the moment, and that's probably his best asset most of the time.
He had that mad little, like, pirouette spin thing in the first half, which was vintage Bobby Firmino. But I think he's dead right. And again, I feel like it's tough because... he's not scoring goals, and he's now, if we're playing a 4-2-3-1, he's further away from the goal, so that's less like, because that was the big criticism last year when we shifted him to that, and was going, well, where's his output? But he's doing a lot of the work, you know, deep in the field, and he was playing the 10 very well, but the problem is he's not in form, and now we've moved him a row back in the side, so the things that get you into form, sticking the ball in the back of the net, etc.
There's also the fact that, look, what might work for three or four other players might not suit him as well. You know, I think he is a better 9 than he is a 10, to be fair. He doesn't play the 10 a lot. And I think when you go back to how he started at Liverpool, we weren't particularly enamoured with him in the 10 either, were we? That's what he came into the side as. Maybe he's just having a little struggle in this league in the 10, but it doesn't really matter as long as teams are still worried about him, first and foremost. And Salah and Mane and Shaqiri are all playing well. Because it's about rotation now. It's about putting out the best side that you possibly can. He's still in that best side. He's still probably the best 10 that we've got. but it is very different. But I think people think because he's a false nine, the 10 should come naturally to him. Mm-hmm. That's not the case.
When you're playing, it's just completely you're facing different. A different direction.
Yeah, exactly. It's just completely different. And, you know, you've got lads like midfielders who might be more tasked with tracking him because his starting position's different. It might be a lot easier to pull a defender and create space for Salah from the 9 mm-hmm. than it is for the 10. So wait and see. I mean, he's had 2 games there almost, hasn't he?
And he looked much better in midweek. In the second half, when he was in there, because he just got to be a bit more involved, it might my thing.
He's got enough credit in the bank.
100% I'm starting to see people, a few people here and there criticising, but the internet's no barometer for dickheads, is it? Like, you know, but the I just think he looks tired, man. I think he looks. I said this last week. He just looks half a yard slower. Mm-hmm. His touch is just a little bit less crisp than it was at the start of the season. This is all perfectly understandable. But I also, for me, it's one of those things that makes sense when you see the Minamino sign potentially is just having another lad who can come in and do a few. You know, it's telling that we've tried a few different lads in Firmino's position more so in the last 12 months. He might just be one of those lads who just could do with a couple of weeks off. Really.
Yeah, and I mean, until Minamino potentially comes in, he's not going to get it, is he? Unfortunately, you know, we've got it's potentially the worst period of the season to be running on empty. And the thing is, you know, you can laud Divock Origi for great assists such as the weekend,
Lord,
and you know, yeah. But you know, it is a drop off, and the way Firmino, whether he's playing in the 10 or whether he's playing in the 9, for me, he's still just as important to this team, and the way he connects with the two wide fellas, and that I think is probably his most valuable asset to us. I think is almost telepathic communication that he can have with them two, and you know, Origi doesn't have it on the same level. So when you, whether he's playing the 10 or playing the 9, you take him out of that side, I do think we drop off. I think you miss those fans who, you know, were complaining about him. I think you'd miss him, if he was taken out. Say he lost him to injury this week,
yeah,
you know, and we had to play a run of games without him, you'd notice that he was gone, you know, and not just because he like at the moment, you know, he's not scoring or whatever, but the little things that you now consider basic of Roberto Firmino, he wouldn't be doing on a regular basis.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number 1 in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
For me, at the end of a long year for him, you know, obviously we had a tough title run in last season. He went and did the Copa America and actually started the season by, you know, he hit the ground running this season. He probably expended a lot of energy doing that. Well, and he's just probably run out of steam a little bit.
We say this about the front three lads. They've all done the same. They've all gone, Champions League, you know, Champions League final, heartbreak, loads of games in the season to the World Cup. Mm. Then they've come back, a very limited pre-season, whatever, coming to a full season, gone as deep as you can go in the full season, going to June, then going away, and then a variety of Copa America, AFCON, etc. No pre-season, come back in. And there's, you can tell, it's telling on all three of them, but at a different extent, Chris. Mane looks like he's handling it quite well. Salah's had a few little ups and downs. And look, is it really any surprise that Roberto Firmino's probably the one who's feeling
it the most? No, but I think, I feel, and I don't know whether this is true or not, but I feel it's been really well managed by the club because they're not all crashing at the same time.
Yeah.
When the other two lads were maybe not there in Firmino and Salah, Mane was able to keep his performances up. It now looks like Salah's back and Firmino's really taken maybe a back seat at the moment. And it wouldn't surprise me if Mane takes a dip and Firmino comes back in because I feel like there's probably more to it than meets the eye almost.
Yeah, like transformers.
Yeah, exactly. And the other thing that, you know, Firmino did in that game, you could put any other player on our team in the position Firmino is in the build-up to our first goal and we don't score a goal. Mm-hmm. Because that overhead
kung fu kick thing
is pure Bobby Firmino.
Yeah.
And literally no other lad would be able to do that and release Mane. Mm-hmm. And therefore, we're 1-0 up essentially because of him and Salah and Mane.
That's a very, very good point. Mohamed Salah now has more goals than Suarez and Torres. 84 goals in 126 games.
It's so mad how underappreciated he is.
Yeah, which is mad because he's the
too cool for school stuff. It's about being like from Liverpool and stuff. And it's like everyone's onto him. He's got this massive following around the world. And it's like, oh yeah, but I prefer Bobby because he only scores 6 goals a season.
Yeah.
It's kind of what it feels like, you know what I mean? It's like there's no reason for us not to have or to have almost fallen out of love with Salah because he's still fucking fantastic. Yeah. And yet he doesn't seem to have that love from Liverpool.
I like Mane more than Salah. Yeah. It's weird, like, but it's mad,
but he's scored the same amount of goals this season and he's had a shit year, and yet Mane's playing as best as he's ever played and we all love Mane, and it's like, hang on a minute, this lad's playing shit.
That 44 goal season just completely skewed the expectations, didn't it?
Yeah, 100%. You know? I completely agree on that. But so Suarez 82 and 133, Torres 81 and 142, and I actually probably love both of those lads more than Salah, and yet Salah is a better Liverpool goal scorer than both of those lads. It's absolutely unreal. And you look at that, let's look at both goals, to be fair, Ben. The first is, it's the kind of Salah goal that we've not seen for a while. And actually, to be fair,
I don't think we've ever seen it with his right.
Exactly. We're coming into a point in the season where he's been toiling a little bit. And now all of a sudden, he's just started scoring goals with his right foot. That's his last three goals, all with his right foot. Or absolute genius in complete and utter different ways. And again, not to go all, you know, Twitter meme on it, like, but if that's Messi, or if that's any other of the top players doing that with their weaker foot, I'm not saying people aren't going mad on it, because we're doing it right now, but we should rightly be going absolutely mad in the best possible way for it, because he's just an absolute genius.
Yeah, I think the first goal in particular is, you know, he strikes it really well. We talked about it before. I think, you know, I think the win helps his case, but it's still a really good strike. And to be honest, in Salzburg in the week, he missed about half a dozen chances with his left foot. So I don't know what foot he is anymore. He's hitting. You know, he goes and does that, and then scores the goal with his right foot from that angle. So, you know, he is really clinical when he wants to be. You know, that he goes through periods of the season where he does become this, you know, even the Bournemouth goal, you know, it looks like a simple goal because of the pass that Keita gives him, but you know, he takes his chance and he scores and he does this consistently for periods of the season, then he will take dips. But you know, as you said before, that's where he's got his teammates around him, where, you know, the likes of Mane will get a goal instead. And I'd love to know the stats, particularly that first goal is Firmino to Mane to Salah. Or, you know, I'd love to know the stats around how many goals the combination is from 1, 2, 3. Yeah. You know, because they, as I said before, you know, Firmino just seems to know where they are, and then Mane and Salah, you know, okay, they've had the problems with the passing and not passing or whatever, but they seem to be sorting that out because, you know, they're setting each other up
they're sorting it out for the better for the team, aren't they? I don't think there really are any issues because all they're about is winning as a team, and that's what it looks like. And that ball by Mane is sensational. The fact that he doesn't take a touch, the fact that he hits it first time, it's perfect for Salah to get his body in front of the defender as well. Then he cuts back, and you know, we talk about the right foot, Paul, and it's something we've said for a few weeks now, is he needs to just do that more. He needs to cut to his right foot because it will open up the left foot next game.
Yeah.
Because teams will be worried about him cutting inside and doing that.
Yeah,
so that just makes his life easier.
Yeah.
And the fact that he's got the ability to stick it in the top bin anyway is unbelievable.
And I mean, obviously, I don't know whether, because he's playing central now, you're gonna have to rely on your weaker foot more, aren't you? Because you're gonna get opportunities on both sides. You know, if you're playing from the right hand side, where, you know, traditionally he wants to cut in, he's playing narrow, then, you know, it's almost a little bit easier to defend because you know he's going to want to cut in on that left foot. But if he's now got the ability to use his right foot as well, if you're a centre-back, you don't know which way he's going to go, and that makes my life far more difficult.
Yeah, absolutely. Just brilliant. I mean, like, yeah, 9 goals in 14 league games so far this season. Saturday,
it's better than 1 and 2 when he's playing shit.
Yeah, Mane's got 9 and 16 for us so far, you know, and that's the telling thing. And just that, obviously, just comparable, obviously Jamie Vardy's running away with it at the moment. 16 and 17 is ludicrous, isn't it? But yeah, Aguero and Sterling both on the same number of goals. So, you know, with you would imagine just more to come. You know, they're only going to get better as the season progresses. But yeah, the second goal is as good an example of how much of a genius he is as his goal in against Salzburg, I think. You know, when it's impossible to score that goal against Salzburg. It's not humanly possible to score with your right foot from that angle, and yet he somehow managed to do it. And that one, Divock, look, let's just do it, because it's unfair to Salah to say that it's a pass. It's a complete miss kick from Divock Origi, and Salah somehow, even though he's what, like a metre away from him, a metre and a half, 2 metres, whatever, he's very, very close, has the ball pinged at him, and somehow manages to like Cruyff flick it through the guy's legs and into the back of there. That's, again, once again, Chris, that's instinctive brilliance. I think he probably thinks he's offside and he's just titting about, to be honest. But even if that's the case,
when you train with the quality of players that Liverpool have, and you train with Adam Lallana week in, week out, right? That becomes a given.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He could cry for rugby ball, couldn't he? Like, you know what I mean? Yeah, absolutely. No, it was.
It's scandalous. It's scandalous, and it shocked everyone in the ground.
Yeah.
And I think that's something, isn't it? Like, not like shocked the way that he top-binned it with his right foot, shocked. But shocked, like, oh my God, has he just done that? Shocked, like, really? Like, because anyone can swing a boot at something and it flies in.
Yeah.
But that is genius on another level.
Yeah. That's the kind of stuff you see when the LFC TV put those like training ground videos out, and you see them just messing around.
No pressure, nothing. Yeah. You can see that done in training all the time because there is no pressure.
Yeah.
You're 1-0 up, you're having a tough game, and you're still able to do that.
Yeah. He's just put the game to bed with the most ludicrous piece of skill. And it's a shame that had to be the goal to put it to bed, Ben, because I felt sorry for Sadio Mane and actually Jadon Sancho, because, I mean, you can hear it in the commentary as well. Like, that is a brilliant goal. Wonderful goal, wonderful goal. Fantastically worked. The second they dropped to Sancho on the left, I remember thinking,
Barcelona.
I was just thinking, he's just gonna put this cross straight in again. I was actually looking. I was like, who's in the middle? Where's Genie? Yeah, where's Genie? Such a shame. I mean, look, it's another one of those mad VAR things. Let's not waste too much time and energy on it, because it kind of is what it is at this point. But if they're saying it's an armpit thing,
it's tight, and the angle that you
armpit.
The angle that you see that they give on the VAR makes him look less offside than he. There's an angle on Match of the Day where they are looking right down, and I think he's offside.
Yeah.
I think he's like
the angle view towards from the main stand, the wide view. He looks offside.
So for me, but that's, this is what confuses me about VAR. And I know you don't want to touch too much on it, but it's like, why aren't they using that angle? Why are they using the angle that makes it look a lot tighter to give the offside?
I'm not sure exactly which angle it is you're talking about, but there is the physics of where the cameras are and the type of lens that are being used, whereas the VAR cameras are all in an exact straight line, and that's why they have like the fucking lines dropping down and stuff. So I tried to do it on the stat show the other day, and like Steve and Tom were in there and they were trying to explain it to me, and it's fucking crazy, because if you look at the, maybe I can do it on one of the stat shows actually, sometimes the 6-yard line points that way and the edge of the area points that way, and that's where you have to draw your lines from miles off the pitch to work out exactly how the line is straight. It's fucking bizarre. Yeah. So I think it's really misleading, mm-hmm. that camera angle, because you don't know if that's a camera angle that they can use without doing all kinds of maths.
Well, you're dead right, because your point is, why are they using the one that makes it tight to make the point? Whereas, but the point is, that's the one they feel is the most accurate. Because you're dead right, because in all the analysis of it, when they go to the first replay, he looks offside. But then when they go into the close finer detail of it, and the thing, and it's been made by other people, it might even be Andy Gay points, and I'm loath to kind of to back his points up. The image starts to blur the more you zoom in. So what are you drawing it to? It's so fine about it. Look, it doesn't matter because we won the game and it's not a big deal, but it's just it's ultimately my analysis on that one. And a shame for Shaq and a shame for Mane, because it was a brilliant celebration. Virgil van Dijk did the kick, the flying Bobby Firmino Mane kick celebration, which, you know, the world was denied because it's not a proper goal. The one thing I was watching Sunday's games with my dad yesterday, and we were talking about it, and he was just like, again, it's the persistent point with VAR. We had no idea. None of us had a clue in the ground why that. You presume it's offside, but the specifics of how it's called.
Checking goal, called, exactly. Before me.
Checking goal, no goal. Okay. Well,
why? Could you just say check and goal for an offside?
Yeah.
Mm. Or are you just checking goal to just canvas all of the things?
Yeah.
And then even if that's the case, just say no goal, it was offside.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's not a difficult thing.
Mm, no, absolutely. Alisson Becker is an absolute wall.
Yeah.
He's just magnificent. And this is why, you know, as much as we've got world-class forwards and midfielders and defenders and all that, when you have a world-class goalie, it affords you to have a game like this when you do leak a few chances. And look, he's the reason we've won that game. He's the reason we got a clean sheet.
Yeah, and look, I think Liverpool tried it, didn't they, where they bought Karius for, what was it, like £4 million or something like that. And we had to roll the dice big after that, because we realised, I think Jürgen realised, the difference that a world-class keeper can make. I think, you know, he'd seen Claudio Bravo going at Man City for £30 million, and he'd seen Pep fuck him off dead quickly for another £30 million goalkeeper. And what Ederson brought to that Manchester City side, Alisson's not only brought, but I think he's exceeded what Ederson's doing for Manchester City. The one-on-ones is unbelievable. Like, I'd much rather him being in a one-on-one situation than just, I always feel like it's advantage Alisson.
Yeah.
And it should never be advantage Alisson. It doesn't matter what striker you are.
Yeah.
He times it so well, like, it's nuts. Because he spoke about it, didn't he, a few months ago, about how he waits for the defender to take one more touch and then goes.
It was last season. Yeah. It was after the Chelsea game with Eden Hazard, and he has that chance where he shuts him down at Stamford Bridge. It's dead right. And he's just huge.
He's like the fucking marshmallow man, though. He makes himself bigger as he fucking goes out, doesn't
Absolutely.
He?
Absolutely. He's just, it's that thing, I think it's the Delafeu one, where he gets a proper hand, hand just comes up and just this massive paw just stops the ball going past them. Absolutely incredible. And that, again, this is it. You know, you've got to have everything going for you, Ben. And it's another example of how Liverpool just have everything right at the moment.
Yeah, and it must be so frustrating for everybody else, because they go, oh, well, you know, they've lost centre-backs to injuries, and, you know, there was a moment, obviously, where, you know, Van Dijk has a wobble, doesn't he, where he plays that back pass, and so they're not playing particularly well, they're not defending particularly well, and then suddenly there'll have been a period in that game where, you know, maybe City fans begin to, you know, pay attention to it, you know, because Watford was creating some chances, and Leicester fans as well. But then, you know, in games where we're not playing particularly well, you know, you've got a goalkeeper then who, it's funny how form works for goalkeepers, because they can just, it seems as if they're just probably the most consistent players on the pitch, aren't they, in the sense of, you know, unless they make an absolute howler, for me. You know, Alisson, when was the last time he had a bad game? You know, in the sense, you know, with like disregarding.
Like 2 weeks ago, like, when he got sent off.
Yeah. But disregarding like major mistakes, and this is the thing with goalkeepers, when they do make big mistakes, then, you know, it's obviously magnified. So I'm getting sent off, the Man United mistake last season, the Leicester mistake. But in a game, there's no particular games where, you know, you think, oh, he's. Like, had a consistently bad game there. You know what I mean? I don't know whether...
There's definitely that, but there's also this, again, this I've mentioned it before, but like the aura that him and Virgil van Dijk have that makes you think twice. David De Gea had this.
Yeah, the people have to go for the top bin.
You've got to be perfect. You can see it in like Will Hughes strides forward and he knows he's got to put it bottom corner or top corner and he skews it wide. And it wouldn't shock me if Decore and Sarr are exactly the same, going, I have got to put this, there's a teeny tiny window of the best possible place I can put this in. It might not even work, even if I do that. I've got to be, I've missed the ball completely. However, never mind, move on.
It's like depends on Pro Evo, isn't it? Yeah. You know, they're going for the top bin and the circle gets wider and they have more chance of missing it because you're going for the tougher areas of the goal. Like, and 100%. David De Gea had it. I think you're exactly right to point that out. Alisson's got it, Ederson's got it. And he must just strike fear into the hearts of strikers to the point where they don't really know what they should be doing because they kind of try everything and nothing ever seems to work.
Absolutely. So 8 years ago, we finished the season with 3 less points than we have today. It's mid-December. That's how good we are right now, isn't it magic? Just quickly, the roundup then. Obviously, Leicester drew 1-1 with Norwich. Thank you very much, Timu Pukki, who had slagged a little bit in the week, saying that no one else
put
parties anymore.
Well done.
Yeah, just G'd them up, Chris. And City absolutely wiped the floor with Arsenal. And did you see De Bruyne's first goal?
The one where he hit it into the top of the net?
The way he just side-footed it on the volley into the top bin.
He had another effort, didn't he, where he hit the post?
He's just
for miles out. He's
and
he'd be great for us.
Yeah, he would. He would be fantastic.
He'd be great for anyone, I think.
Yeah.
Are people forensically analysing the fact that City are 14 points behind us yet? Or are they still just blaming it on a few injuries?
Probably injuries, isn't it? Yeah, it's probably injuries' fault.
Because like, if it was the other way around, like, you know, there'd be a lot of media looking at what Liverpool did wrong in the summer. But no. Okay, so just saying.
Funny that, isn't it? Yeah, nobody seems to think of it that way.
Still blaming company.
Probably all company's fault, to be fair, mate. Probably.
Mad, innit? Because didn't he tell them that he was leaving?
It's probably Pellegrini's fault, isn't it? Still.
I don't remember us blaming the fact that Gerrard retired last season for us not getting the extra point, Paul.
Man City, distance between us and Man City is the same distance between them and 12th place Burnley.
What's the one if you add City and Everton points up? Where are they?
They're still behind us as well. Great, I love it all. Right, we'll wrap up there. The Champions League draw is looming or will have passed by the time you watch this. Big shout out though, we've got an exclusive interview with Liverpool legend Emil Heskey on the RedmenTV.com. He was sat down with me in the studio talking through his life and times, coming through the ranks at Leicester, getting the call from Liverpool, and then how he settled into living life, the treble, Fowler, Owen, all that kind of stuff. Brilliant stuff. It's completely exclusive on the RedmenTV.com. There is a free bit on the YouTube channel if you want to check that out first. But yeah, head over there. It's completely free for the first month. And I'll see you over there. Ta-da.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.